asked in the previous episode what you would do if a loved one was being taken advantage of and how far you would go to protect them. In the second part of this two-part interview, we finish our conversation with the daughter of a World War II vet who was exploited by a guardianship in Nevada and wonder why they are still allowed to take care of seniors today. Welcome to Archangels of Justice Weekly. I am your host, Joe Rost, and as you just heard, this is the second part in a two-part series about a corrupt guardianship in Nevada. If you've not heard part one, I recommend starting that episode first, then picking back up here. In part two of our interview with Becky Schultz, I am joined by our two archangels, Sal and Ira, as we talk about all the lives Jared Schaefer has affected, the publicity Becky's father's case has received, and the lengths these people will go to protect themselves. Picking back up with the interview. Jared Schaefer has been a guardian for over 38 years, so there must be hundreds, if not thousands, of older people that have been exploited by this man.
There are. I mean, we're only one case. What makes our case unique is that I am the only one, I believe, that ever got their parent out of there, because all the other people that were victims of this system, they only got out of the guardianship when they died. Okay? The guardianship ended when they died. Mm-hmm. Because I brought my father here, Schaefer got frustrated after a while. They kept spending my dad's money. And what happened was, he says, okay, I'll terminate here, but you have to have a guardianship in California. And here we call it a conservatorship. And I'm telling my attorneys, oh my God, I don't want to put my father under another guardianship. He doesn't need one. He's competent. But they're saying, well, but Schaefer will terminate if we put one here. So I reluctantly said, oh, I guess okay. But then Schaefer goes, oh, by the way, when you create that conservatorship, the conservator has to be a professional that you're going to pay to be the conservator over your father's estate, because Becky Schultz and her husband or anybody in their family, none of them are to be handling the money. So now he's treating us like criminals again. So my father was forced to create a conservatorship here, which cost more money. We had to hire a conservator here that would take over the finances. Luckily for us, this man was relatively honest. When we explained to him everything that happened and he met my father, he says, I'll agree to do this and I'll agree to do it to help you to terminate there. And in 1 year, I'll let it go because you guys don't need the guardianship. So we are grateful to that man because he kept his word. So we got the conservatorship in place. Right now, at that point, my father was living under two guardianships, technically, one in Nevada, one in California. Guess what? Mr. Schaefer didn't keep his word. He didn't immediately terminate. He waited 8 months. He waited for my father. He made my father live under two guardianships at the same time for 8 months, both costing my father money. And the only reason he terminated, you're going to love this, is because the conservator kept bugging the bank, Wells Fargo, and saying, I'm the conservator now. He's living here now. You have to transfer the trust money to me. And they didn't want to do it. So finally, we had to have our attorney, because my conservator and I were both using the same attorney, a nice lady. She had to send kind of a strong letter to their legal department saying, you got to turn that money over. Finally, Wells Fargo turned the money over. And it was only then that Mr. Schaefer said he would terminate. And why? Because then he couldn't give bills to the Wells Fargo Trust anymore, and they couldn't pay him anymore. In other words, the door finally shut on him taking money, and that's the only reason he terminated.
So he was taking money during that entire 8 months. He was still paying himself $250 an hour.
Of course. Yeah, Jesus. Because every time there was a hearing regarding all of this garbage, he would go and he would bill $250 an hour. His attorneys, the ones that built my father well over $110,000, mm-hmm. $100,000, they would go. And Oh yeah, this is just really disgusting. So when the money got over here and they were ready to terminate, they still wouldn't terminate until my conservator here sent them certified checks to their law firm and to Schaefer for their last fees. In other words, they acted like they didn't trust us. Like, okay, well, we're all ready to terminate, but we want our money and we want certified checks. And once we get those checks, oh, then we'll terminate. So they put us through that too. And then it was all over. So I think I'm the only one that actually was able to get a parent not only away from them, but then to get it terminated and get a second one terminated in California, because then when that year was up that this guy took over here, he kept his word. We had tons of documentation of my father's competency from a bunch of professionals, including the VA, and was all given to the court. And the court said, hey, you know, I'm terminating. Mr. Olvera can take care of his own business and you're out of this, you know? And all that time in Nevada, they kept saying my father was incompetent the whole time. And oh, by the way, when we had our California reports from doctors in the VA and we sent them to them to prove he was competent, Mr. Schaefer said, I'm not taking anything from California. I have to have a Nevada doctor. I don't care about California. So we were forced into, at one point in time, taking my father to a psychiatrist up in Reno. And wouldn't you know it, she saw my father for less than an hour. She billed him over $2,000. And guess what? Her report just happened to say he was incompetent. And that was you know, after he'd already been deemed competent by various people. So doesn't that sound a little suspicious to you guys?
Yeah. What was her name?
Her name was Dr. Pia Secchi up in Reno.
Okay.
Pia Secchi. The professionals in California, PhD psychologists and MD psychiatrists, Veterans Administration doctors, they all deemed my father competent. And the professionals here only charged my father $250 to $350 an hour. So, and for an, you know, for their time, this woman saw my dad for a little under an hour, and she billed him $2,100, which of course Schaefer got a court order to pay her for my dad's money. She got $2,100 to write a paper making my father sound like he was an idiot. In fact, one of the doctors here was so upset when he saw that he agreed to evaluate my father again after that, and, you know, deemed him totally fine again. So he knew that was, you know, a problem.
Do you have her report?
I have everything. I've got so much stuff, it's ridiculous.
Well, we can talk off air about where to send the info, but I wanted to talk about the publicity your case has received, because you mentioned to me that your father actually appeared in an article in The New Yorker, but that you were disappointed with the way that it was presented.
You know, my father was kind of an afterthought in that. I mean, that article was very long. It was 7,000 or 8,000 words. And I did spend a lot of time with that reporter, as did Steve Miller. And, you know, she chose to highlight a family that, a couple that was still alive and that got out of the guardianship. But they only got out of the guardianship because they were one of many guardianships that the new judge was, you know, releasing because of the media that had been going on. Because Darcy Spears at KTNB Las Vegas TV had been, you know, covering, you know, a couple of cases there. And so when they got rid of the Commissioner Norheim, the one that caused so many problems for us, and they put in Judge Steele, she started terminating a lot of guardianship. So, you know, that was under pressure. So that whole New Yorker was mainly about that couple. And they talked about, you know, the whole problem in Nevada, excuse me. And there was a little mention there of my father. I forget exactly what it said. I don't remember because it was such a, I think it was just two small paragraphs. But I'm glad that it ran because it did bring some national attention to the problem. Although there was a lot it didn't cover.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that wasn't addressed is that guardianship is a problem for everybody in society because of the, because what happens is usually the guardians will use all the assets of the person and get to the point where that person is destitute. Then they have to go on the public dole. You know, they have to go on the government monies to support them. So in the end, people that had money to support them and take care of themselves for their entire life until they died, get their money, you know, blown way before it should be. And then they wind up, using government money. And that's a big problem. So this is causing a big waste of taxpayer money, this whole guardianship system. Because a lot of these people, they had enough money. Some of them had hundreds of thousands. Some of them had millions. And they had enough money to provide care for themselves. But the guardianships, you know, bleed out all the money. And then the people wind up on, you know, Medicaid and living in substandard places and off of the system's money. And that's one issue that was not covered by the New Yorker. And it's very important.
You've also received coverage, though, in the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Did any law enforcement agencies or attorneys try to contact you after that article was released?
Not my case specifically. I mean, he wrote three articles. There was one about Christina Berger that was on the cover, too, and there was my father, and then there was one in general about the system there. And it was that article, I believe, that caused the community there, you know, meaning the court system, they created the guardianship commission after that article came out. And also KNTV down there was starting to do some coverage on a couple cases. So the media did help to bring attention to the problem there. And there were a few, they changed the law, I believe, for the, residency. Another way all of us were treated poorly is because the statute said that if you lived out of state, you could not be a guardian for somebody. And so that was also used against my family and many other families because most of the people in the guardianship had come there from another state, like my parents. So their children lived in Arizona or California or Utah or maybe back east or whatever. You know, they lived somewhere else. So the law stated that, so that's the first thing they did to me, that attorney Elise Tyrell said, you can't be your father's guardian anyway, because here she wrote it on, here's the funny part, she wrote it on my contract. I have that. It says Becky Schultz as guardian for Guadalupe Olvera. Okay? But then later she says, you're not a resident of Nevada, so you have no rights here. So that's what they would tell the court, too. They go, so the only way that an out-of-state person could be the guardian with their for their parents was if they were co-guardian with someone else. And I was also told by Tyrell that Schaefer would be co-guardian with me. But that didn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, that was another lie, you know. So, yeah, so they did. So now the law is that, yes, if you're out-of-state, you can be. But the laws in Nevada don't mean anything because they've had laws and statutes and they haven't followed them anyway. So just because somebody is, because now what can happen as a, for instance, is let's say somebody is out of state and they file to be the guardian and they go through the process. Well, in the court, all the other people have to say is, well, fine, you have a right to be a guardian because you're out of state, but you're not fit to be a guardian. And this is what they've done to some people. They find another excuse why you can't intervene. You know, you're a bad person. You have bad credit. You're a drug addict. You're an alcoholic. You're this, you're that. Okay? So the laws there don't seem to mean that much because they can still cut you off anyway another way. No law in Nevada, really, because there just isn't. I mean, the only people that have been busted there for this are the the ones that were really careless and young and not practicing as long. I mean, they went after April Parks. She was a bad person. She overbilled a whole bunch of people, and they arrested her. She's, I think, about 50 years old, and they've got her on, like, you know, I don't know, 100 or 200 counts of, you know, overbilling or exploitation financially or whatever. She has a hearing coming up in April, but she's only been practicing like 12 years. Mr. Schaefer was a public guardian from 1979 to 2003 and then transitioned into the private practice, which he's still practicing, but not much because he didn't get licensed.
The other person I wanted to bring up was the former attorney general, Catherine Cortez Masto. She was a
former, she was the former one. Yeah,
she's a senator now.
Yes, and that's even worse.
yeah.
So, in your research, you actually found that she was the goddaughter of Jared Schaefer. If Masto was that close with Schaefer, why was she allowed to look into this case, and why wouldn't she recuse herself?
She didn't recuse herself from anything. Her office just ignored the complaint. Even though her website at the time said that she was, they were advocates and would prosecute, you know, would aggressively prosecute anybody that was, you know, exploiting or harming seniors in any way, she didn't do anything. All I got was a form letter back, which I can show you. And other people filed complaints, and they didn't. Nobody did anything. She didn't care. And then talking to people like Steve Miller, you know, her father was Manny Cortez, who was one of the county commissioners or something at some point, and head of tourism, I forget exactly. You'd have to talk to Mr. Miller. You know, he and Schaefer were good friends, and Catherine Masto was, from what I've been told. I mean, I don't know firsthand. I'm just saying what I've heard, she allegedly is the goddaughter. And it must be true because she didn't do anything to help any of us.
Mm-hmm.
She ignored all the complaints that people filed against various people, including Mr. Schaefer. So it must be true. I mean, we've all been ignored for so many reasons. I mean, the opinion we have is that they've only prosecuted lesser people that as a show of, look at what we're doing. We're doing something, but they're not really going after, you know, the bigger fish.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we feel. It's kind of like, let's make a good show of, okay, they went after April Parks. She deserved it. She was a bad person. She did overcharge people. You know, but the amount of money they got her for, approximately 150 people that she overbilled to the tune of about $159,000, I know, but that's nothing because people like Mr. Schaefer have caused that much money to be blown out of just one victim's estate. When you do the math on Parks, it's only $2,000 to $4,000 per person, which is nothing. I mean, Mr. Schaefer, I have the invoices and they are on the internet. Mr. Miller has them on one of his sites. For instance, my father was billed over $6,000 for 20 days of him reading emails. And there's another invoice where my father was charged over $7,000 for reading emails. Come on. But of course, Metro Police Department, you know what they told me when they were investigating? Oh, there's no law against overbilling. It's not right, but there's no law against it. That's what they told me.
Jeez.
Okay? So, yeah. I mean, I got the impression they were protecting him because they said things to me that sounded like they had been talking to him and things that were false. And I said, you mean you've already interviewed Mr. Schaefer and them, but you technically really haven't interviewed me?
Yeah.
And they never pushed to interview me. They never really pushed to really, really, you know, get me there in person or do an official interview on the phone. They took my complaint, the documents I gave them, to talk to me on the phone to the detective that was investigating had a personality like, you know, like 30 grit sandpaper, and never returned calls. My last email to them, they never responded. I asked them about getting the records of the investigation. And I just think it's all been a dog and pony show. That's just, that's what we all think. It's all been a dog and pony show to look like they're doing something and they're not.
Sal, you were going to say something?
Earlier I was going to say something about the way this operation works. We talked about this in our first podcast about exploitations and guardianships. When you're in a system that has a judge and has several attorneys that are constantly in and out of that system, you know, I know for a fact that judges and lawyers and these guardians all over the country have personal relationships. And when you try to file a complaint against them, they're basically investigating the complaint themselves. That never works. So, and then when you involve another entity, like the attorney general of that state, you've got the same situation because the attorney general is an elected official, just like the judge and just like the county commissioners. And if there's any personal relationships or family relationships between these people, don't expect to get anything done. It won't happen unless you absolutely have absolute proof of thievery. Now, in this case, just hearing what you've said, I still believe, like Ira said, that there's a possibility of a criminal complaint being filed through the Department of Justice, but it would have to be done in such a way that we'd have to provide all the documentation that would prove a criminal enterprise. The police themselves are absolutely refusing to give you documents telling you have to come personally to obtain them. I've never heard of such a thing. The Freedom of Information Act, anybody should be able to get those documents. I should be able to say, I want these documents and send in whatever it is per page and obtain them. I've never heard that a family member would have to come in and personally obtain those. I get documents all over the country, and I know Ira does too, by filing a formal, you know, Freedom of Information Act statement, requesting the documents. Sometimes we have to pay $50, sometimes it's $100. But needless to say, when I was a police officer, and I brought this up when we had Marsha on last time, that, you know, when we got a complaint from a family member, at least when I got one, I went and actually investigated the complaint. And if I could determine that the guardian was acting in an illegal manner, and this was attorneys as well, we put them under arrest. We would get an arrest warrant for them and put them in jail, or we'd arrest them on a probable cause based on the information we obtained during our investigation. And we'd push those prosecutions through. But in some states, and obviously you ran into this in Metro, they don't want to deal with it because they're basically told it's a civil matter, back off. This is not a criminal matter. And that's the kind of games that they play.
That's what they do.
Don't know any different.
Yeah. They told that to just about everybody who called Metro in the last 10 years.
Yeah. And that's typical. And you know, it's sad, but we've seen it. I've worked those kind of cases when I was a police officer and put people in jail for this stuff. And it really makes me sick when a family member wants to take care of their parent, and the parent is obviously coherent and says, I want to be with my daughter or my son, and the court won't allow it. So you know right there that there is some kind of collusion between the judge, between the attorneys, and between the guardians to prevent a family member from taking care of their parent. And that's the sad part. And that's why I really believe that if this thing was opened up wide enough and it got enough exposure nationally, you would see the laws change. And these judges and attorneys wouldn't be allowed to get away with this anymore. Because this billing at $200 an hour is ludicrous to sit in wait for a decision by the court for a guardian. And then these attorneys, because they're all milking that estate. So at the end of the day, how does it help the person that's supposed to be being protected? It's not helping them when they're bilking that estate hundreds of thousands of dollars.
By the way, when I complained to the bank who was paying whatever Schaefer would submit for his people, they accused me, and so did Schaefer's attorneys, They said it was my fault that my father was being spent because poor Mr. Schaefer had to defend himself from me.
Well, so they again, play, that's they the game they me. Play.
Yeah, see, I know.
And you're looking at the law, the way that law is set up, just from hearing what you said, is basically once the person's put in guardianship, the attorney for the guardianship and the guardian himself, they have all the rights. The family yeah. members have no rights, and neither does the yeah. person that they're supposed to be protecting. And the system protects itself. And when you said earlier, you don't know how the judges benefit. Well, the judge may not be benefiting directly, you know, in the sense that the guardian's giving him money under the table or the attorney, but there is some kind of benefit, or these judges would stop it. So obviously the judges are getting benefit somehow, because the law is not protecting the person. And exactly. their money's being used to protect these outsiders. These judges have to be corrupt. They have to be, because anybody with a common sense and any kind of brains would say, this attorney's charging $150,000. It's coming out of this man's estate, which could support him, could, you know, provide medical, could provide food, it could provide whatever this person needs. And this attorney's taking it. To protect yeah. this man from what?
Oh, but they blame the family because the family
again
fighting them.
Family without proof is just another allegation. And then if a judge
their proof is the filing. Their proof is that of my attorneys filing all these oppositions to them. That's how they go. Oh, look, see what she's doing. Now,
you have a right. The point I'm trying to make is, and this is where we have to attack the system. Is that the system is not protecting the person. They're protecting themselves. You know, if as a family member, you should have a right to say, I don't think this is right, and there should be a hearing on it. But to charge the amount of money they're charging for a one-day hearing, if you're providing documentation, is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely ridiculous. They're just milking the system. And like you said, once he dies, they're out of the guardianship. Once there's no money to steal, they're out of the guardianship. They don't care anymore. There's nothing left to take. And that's we had said this, there needs to be a set standard price for guardians. It's X amount of dollars an hour, not these crazy figures of $200 an hour to go over to the house. You know,
$250.
Well, my point is, it's ludicrous. A registered nurse in hospital, for example, is more than capable of taking care of someone. The registered nurse and the average price is $40 to $50 an hour for a registered nurse. That's what they get paid. So why are we paying guardians that have no medical background $250 an hour? See, it gets to the point where it's ridiculous. Someone needs a caretaker, you know, there are services that bring nurses in that they pay X amount of dollars an hour to take care of that. And it doesn't come close to this $250 an hour that these guardians are getting. These people are stealing and getting away with it, and the judges are allowing it. And in my opinion, if this thing is approached right, there is a way to go after these people criminally in the federal system.
Well,
because the states are not going to do it. Because there's too many federal
boards. I have to interject here. In Nevada, there obviously is problems or corruption within the DOJ in Nevada.
Absolutely.
So that's why we have to do this out of the state, because I did talk to the U.S. attorney that was in charge of the Southern Division of the DOJ, and he acted very interested. He actually called me back on a holiday when I left him a message, and he said, oh yes, I do know who Jared Schaefer is, and he said, you know, you. And he says, what is it? So I gave him information, but I got the distinct impression he was really just trying to find out what I knew.
That's right.
And what I had to say, just so he could let Mr. Schaefer know.
That's
now,
right.
when Trump
That's
got,
exactly what
Trump
they
got in office, he got rid of him. He's gone now.
Yeah.
So I've been waiting for a better person. Also, one of my attorneys recently told me that the judges also let a lot of these people do what they want, these guardians in their law firms, because the guardians and the attorneys are the ones that give money to the judges' campaign.
Well, that's the other way they would get it. And see, and you wouldn't know it until you did a campaign research to see who's donated money to their campaigns or how many free lunches they get invited to or golf tourneys and things like that that are paid for. And that's, you know, nobody looks at that. But when you file the complaints and you show the proof where, you know, you had a legitimate complaint, but it kept falling on deaf ears, you get getting pushed aside. Sooner or later, the Department of Justice and the federal government's got to look at this and say that these people, the judges, the prosecutors, and the police have acted inappropriately, and they've, under the color of law, have violated the law. And that's the only way to get these kind of cases cleared up, because civilly, they're not going to do anything because they have the law on their side.
No, we've been wanting the feds for a long time, and I have tried. I've become friends with the U.S. attorney here in San Jose, who has tried to over the years help me by referring me to different people in Nevada, but it's out of her jurisdiction.
I'll forget it.
She can't do anything,
But that's what happens. They'll always refer you to someone else. Ira and I go through this almost daily when we fire off letters to different places. Well, we're not set up to investigate that. You need to send that complaint here. And then we get a letter back from that place that says the same thing. Send your complaint over there.
Exactly.
And it's just a game. It's an absolute game. They don't want to do anything until you hit the right buttons. And Ira and I have done it on a number of occasions. We've hit the right buttons. And then all of a sudden, people are going to jail because now all of a sudden, we're exposing their weak points. And they know they can't get away with it anymore.
Well, in Nevada, we haven't been able to hit the right buttons yet, even though everyone
it's
knows.
Hard. It's not easy. I feel for you. I know it's not easy because Ira and I have been fighting this for a long time in different kinds of courts, different kinds of cases.
Right.
But the corruption is neck deep everywhere in our court systems.
It is.
I'm going to step in right here as we take a break for a quick message from Total Front Page. Did you know that approximately 95% of purchase decisions are made on the first pages of search engines? TotalFrontPage.com knows this, and they can do what no other digital marketing company does. Put your company name in the autocomplete box of Google and Bing so that searchers see your business before they see any other company. Your business will appear in most, if not all, organic listings. No competitors, just you. If you'd like to know more about this groundbreaking service, you can check out their website, TotalFrontPage.com. Or for a free consultation, mention AOJ Podcast in the subject line when you email info@totalfrontpage.com. Act today, because once these search terms are purchased, they cannot be used by any other company. And now back to the interview with Becky Schultz. This whole situation didn't just affect your father and his estate, but you personally. And Jared Schaefer actually sued you. How did that lawsuit come about?
Well, like I said, my father came back here in the end of 2010. So all through 2011 and 2012, we were fighting to get that darn guardianship terminated there. And I explained to you what his terms were in the end about us starting one here. So in 2012, in November, they filed a suit against me, and they claimed that I had posted over 100 defamatory reports on Schaefer and his associates on the complaint site, which I didn't do. So they filed this complaint without a shred of evidence, and I felt immediately at that time it was just a slap suit and a vendetta. And just, I think he was just still upset that I had saved my father, and I was gaining some progress in terminating the guardianship. Eventually, they did some discovery, and they found a preponderance of evidence that pointed to Charles Pascal as having been the one who's written these reports. Now, Charles Pascal, I mentioned him before, he's the one who had his mother-in-law taken out of California and dragged back to Nevada by Schaefer's associates and put back into a guardianship, and she was dead in 5 months. So Mr. Pascal had gone through everything I had gone through. He had been to the FBI and to the police and all the different agencies. Nobody would listen to him. Nobody cared. There'd been a real kidnapping. Nobody cared, you know, that she died dehydrated and all this stuff. And he was pretty upset. Apparently, he had posted all this stuff out of sheer frustration, not because he was a bad person, but he just thought, nobody will listen to me. How am I supposed to get back at him? So even though the evidence certainly pointed to him, my first attorney, who was not the best, he did get me dismissed, but she did it with, is it with prejudice or without? She allowed them to put me back in. So I got dismissed.
Without prejudice.
Without prejudice. And because then they started on this campaign of saying, well, you guys colluded. Even though they knew it looked like he did it, they said, well, you guys colluded. Well, which wasn't true. And they had, you know, IP addresses and stuff, but none of the IP addresses logging in to this website was my IP address. There was one out of Daly City, 90 miles from me, but it wasn't me. So they had a vague, you know, they had vague evidence on me. And the reason they were trying to keep us together is they thought it would be financially more beneficial for me, for them, because Mr. Pascal is legally blind. He's on disability. And they were mad at me because, you know, I had my father, I managed to save my father's house and stuff. So I the whole lawsuit, in my opinion, was just a vendetta, really. So this dragged out for a while. We finally had a settlement agreement, oh, I don't know, like 2.5 years ago. And basically they were okay with not any kind of compensation. Their concern was just getting these reports off the internet. And my attorney then did send them a draft of a settlement agreement, and they never responded. And a year or so goes by, and then suddenly, you know, they send an unreasonable agreement, and then Pascal finally, you know, confesses and actually tells them, yeah, it actually was me, I did it, and she had nothing to do with it, you know. So this has cost me about $30,000. It's ruined the last 5 years of my life, and I think that was the whole purpose. They just wanted to make me miserable, make me spend money. And my attorney withdrew last week because I can't give him any more money. So now I'll be defending myself. And I think what's happening, you know, Pascal and I are both senior citizens. So isn't this a form of elder abuse, what they're doing to me, you know?
I mean, yeah, that's kind of what it sounds like to me. But so even though you didn't write the post, wouldn't they have to prove that these posts cause harm to their business? Or actually false in any way?
Because a lot of the reports that Pascal wrote, they have, I guess, false names and false cases. You know, like Joe Blow, my aunt, this happened, whatever, you know. The bottom line is the theme. I haven't read them all, but people have told me about them. And I've seen a few because quite frankly, I think it's a stupid site that allows people to put whatever they want up and they don't even care. Mm-hmm. But from what I've been told, there's some pretty nasty stuff written there. And it's, you know, things that are, you know, not true, but the theme of the reports are true of what these people do. You know, as far as the theme of them, you know, the financial bleeding and, you know, the different things that they do in these guardianships. But the cases that are cited or the stories that these people are telling, they're not the real names or the real cases or whatever. So that's what makes them defamatory, because they're not real.
Right, but they're not you. You're not saying it.
It's not you writing this. They're trying to say that I wrote these four reports, but I didn't.
But back to what Joe said, first of all, they have to prove you did it. Secondly, they have to prove it is libel and slander, and that they've lost something from it. You know, what this site says is that this is a common course of conduct that these people are perpetrating. And at the end of the day, if there was discovery, you know, on the cases these people have had that shows this common course of conduct is true, they may be looking at jail time. They'd be smarter to drop their lawsuit and wash their hands and walk away. Well, if you didn't write it, I wouldn't sign anything. That's my point. I mean, they have to prove it. See, when you sue someone, that the person that's suing has to provide proof. They're saying you committed a crime, you know, whether it's civil or criminal. They have to provide the factual basis that supports their claim. If they can't do it, they have no claim.
Well, their claim.
You as essentially the defendant.
Well, they also have Pascal confessing. They also have this man confessing to having written them all.
Well, my point is you have every right to defend yourself. So that means if you wanted to spend the money, like Iris said, you could order all kinds of discovery from police reports to every allegation that was made during the problems that you had with your father's guardians, the fact that you had to move him to California and that you supported him and that this group still took money while you had your father. I mean, at some point at the end of the day, the judge is going to say, if you had a different venue, they're going to go, wait a minute, the guardianship was stealing from the estate. They weren't taking care of it.
Well, yeah, we would have a trial with the jury, but
they don't want to do that. They don't want to do
that. No, I've been told by a lot of people that are familiar with the climate there. They said they're not going to really want to go through a trial.
They're not going to want to go to trial.
But they could file a motion for summary judgment against me, maybe.
They could file all kinds of things, but you could demand a jury trial. They you're the defendant. They have to prove you're guilty.
I'm defending myself now. I've lost my.
My point is, they're the ones that filed the suit. They're the plaintiff. You're the defendant. They have to prove you did it. So for them to ask for summary judgment, you could say, oh, no, I want a jury trial. They don't want to go in front of a jury because when a jury of 12 people hear this story, they're going to be lucky if they don't walk out of that place in handcuffs.
This is Nevada, and I don't trust the judge.
No, the judge is a different story. But the jury themselves, if they were to hear this story,
for summary judgment, and the judge could give it to them.
That he can't do it. If you want a jury trial, you have to get a jury trial. That's your right. That's your right in the United States to be tried by a jury of your peers.
I don't think I can stop them from filing a motion for summary judgment before.
You could stop them, but that you could stop them because you just demand you want a jury trial. Ira, is that not right?
It depends on how far along in the proceedings there are. There might be a scheduling conference that says that she can no longer request a jury trial. The thing is, though, that if they file a motion for summary judgment, you're entitled to answer it, and you can allege fraud. You can allege that it's a fraudulent motion, and you want sanctions against the attorney. Because of the fact they know that this guy was the one that did it, and not you, and go in that direction. But there's a lot of different ways and a lot of different things you can go into. I wouldn't worry so much about a summary judgment because of the fact you're entitled to respond, and when you respond, you'll say I want criminal charges issued against the attorney because their information is false, and they'll choke.
The last big topic I wanted to bring up as we close this interview is, what advice would you give to other people so they don't end up in a situation like your family did?
That's the, what do they call it?
$1 million question.
The million dollar question, you know? Trying to avoid the problem is the problem.
Maybe I'll ask it like this. When your mother was alive, was there anything you feel you should have done differently?
No, oh. No, from the beginning, from when my mom started it, I couldn't stop her. Okay. It wouldn't have mattered what I said. I could have gone there in person and grabbed her by the shoulders and said, don't do this. She would have done it anyway. So once she did that, that set things in motion, okay? Now, as far as when I went there and I couldn't find my father, I didn't know what to do. I had no options. I couldn't find my father. And so, of course, when somebody said, why don't you call the Guardianship Commission office, that's the one thing I wish that I hadn't done, but I was innocent. I did not know who these people were. I did not know they were going to give me the home phone number. It was an inside job. Obviously, they thought, oh, here's a ripe one. This girl can't find a father. You know, hey, we'll let Mr. Schaefer handle this. So they gave me his phone number. So, yeah, I wish I had never called that office, because that led to me talking to Schaefer. That led to me, him sending me to his attorney. And that led to them duping me and lying to me about what they were going to do to help me. You know, but otherwise, I did nothing else wrong. I did everything that I possibly could to help my father. There was, I mean, once that county gave me his phone number, that was it. That was it. I didn't know who he was. Did I have time? Did I have a computer with me? No. Did I have time to go, oh, let's see, who is this guy? You know? And at that time, there wasn't too much about him on the internet other than he had been sued in a federal court in Utah for selling securities without a license. And that alone, him settling for $20,000 with his CPAs, who will, by the way, do the guardianship taxes for the guardians, for the wards, he should never have been allowed to even act as a fiduciary and a guardian, having had that federal case for selling securities without a license. Okay? That was the only thing I found on him within a week afterwards when I realized who these people weren't good. And he had an ethics case filed against him by Terry Williams, another victim. Her father was a victim of a bad administrative thing with the estate. So I found those things. I addressed it to the attorney immediately. She laughed at me and basically said, oh, I can trust Mr. Schaefer. I would trust him with my own life. I would trust him with my family. Oh, none of that went anywhere, blah, blah, blah. So she just blew me off when I found the two negative things that were on the internet about him.
Mm-hmm.
But did I have time to look up who this guy was when I was there looking for my father? I didn't even have access to a computer. There was nothing I could do to change that system.
No.
And the other problem that I haven't gone into much detail is that the woman that was holding him hostage is a gal that was a reception at their community center that my mom had befriended 2 or 3 years before. My daughter and I knew that this woman was a problem. My daughter and I knew that she was taking advantage of my mother. So, because my mom held on to her money and she rarely gave people money, but we found out she was giving this woman money. We found out that she was doing a lot of favors for this woman, and we kept telling her that we thought this Kathy was a problem. She's the one that hid my father when she found out from, I had talked to an aunt knew her and told her I was coming down innocently. And when she found out I was coming, she deliberately hid my father from me. If that had not ever happened, if that woman had not hidden my father from me, we would have been able to get into that house and deal with my dad, see him, and just put him on a plane with us and take him to California and then dealt with the estate. And we would have only had to deal with the trustee. My mother had also been ill-advised to make the bank the trustee if she died first. That was our other problem, because the bank seemed to be very friendly with Mr. Schaefer. And so whenever he submitted bills to the trust, they just paid him. That was the other problem. So the real person that caused this to get out of control was the woman that hid my father from me, because had she not done that, we would have had access to my father and I would have never had to call the county. Okay? So, And if we'd gotten him out of the state, then they probably would have just terminated if he was, not there. So that woman, I did sue her and the people that employed her in our lawsuit, but unfortunately we did a little too late, and because of statute of limitations she got out of the lawsuit. But that's a horrible, horrible person, and I don't have good feelings towards her, and I believe she's still working, and I believe they even made her full time, so she's been rewarded for her actions of taking advantage of you know, residents in that community. So that was another part of the problem that I didn't go into too much detail earlier, that if that woman hadn't hid my father from me and removed him from the home, I would have never called the county.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem we would have had was just dealing with Wells Fargo as the trustee. And once we got my dad in California, got paperwork on his competency, we probably would have been able to remove them as trustee within a few months. So, but because of her, I ended up calling the county. Calling the county, they gave me the guardian's name, and it was all downhill from there. I mean, I know some people would have not done anything. They would have just let their parents stay there and not done a damn thing.
Yeah.
You know, because many of the victims I've talked to, by the way, have been threatened, seriously threatened by these people, and were just too terrified to speak up or to do anything. But they messed with the wrong family this time.
Mm-hmm.
They messed with the wrong family this time.
Yeah.
Sal or Ira, did you have anything to add before we go?
Well, like I was saying before, I really think this we could get criminal charges on some of these people if we keep pushing this agenda hard, because there's definitely a problem in this country. It's not just this case. There's tons of them.
And, there is.
You know, it's just got to happen. And see, and these people have to come forward. You know, these people that are afraid to speak, they need to come forward and get on here with us and talk about their situations, because this is an epidemic.
I can get you a couple of other people. Even though Pascal caused me to be sued, and I'm not happy with him about it,
mm-hmm.
I still understand why he did what he did. And quite honestly, if he had not given me the courage and urged me to save my father, mm-hmm. I may not have had the courage to do it. Okay, but yes, I am unhappy with what he's done, and it's cost me $30,000, and you know, it hasn't been easy. Just a minute, my husband's walking in here. What? We're all on the phone. He just said the Kickapoos never gave in to the U.S. Because my father had the Kickapoo on his father's side. You know, Kickapoo Indians.
Becky, is there anything you'd like to say before we let you go?
I appreciate all three of you being interested in being advocates, okay? I really, really do appreciate that. And it's really nice to find, you know, people that are concerned about this mess, okay?
Yeah.
So, because I still don't want to give up. I still would like to see these people pay for what they've done to my family and hundreds of others. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to try to get justice somehow for somebody, mm-hmm. you know, we'll never get the money back that we've lost, but you know, unless we make a movie or something, but, mm-hmm. but it'd be so nice if somebody could just be made accountable for what's happened. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We agree.
That concludes this interview with Becky Schultz. We plan to investigate this case and look further into Jared Schaefer's background, and we will let you listeners know our findings. But before we go, Sal wanted to make one last statement on guardianship abuse.
Recognize that these people are thieves, and the states need to step in and stop this nonsense. There needs to be regulation on what kind of schooling and what kind of training a guardian should have, number one. Number two, there needs to be set prices. This $200 an hour or more is absolutely ridiculous. There's professionals out there, nurses, that can do this job for $40 or $50 an hour and then maybe pay their driving time to and from. But this $200 and $250 an hour is an absolute thievery, and it shouldn't be allowed. Again, you know, these guardianships are never in the best interest of you. And they're not in the best interest of your family. Most of the time, and I've seen it over and over and over again, they wind up milking your bank account dry
your monthly income, whether it be from Social Security and retirement pensions, they milk it dry. Then they start charging against the property. If you have equity in your home, they'll turn around and wind up selling your property to pay off the debt. And when you're broke, you'll wind up being pushed into some below standard kennel, essentially. I've seen dog kennels that are cleaner and nicer than some of the places that elderly people wind up in. They'll be on guard. Don't fall prey to these people. They're out there. They'll come to you with a smile on their face, and they're nothing but con men and con women. And all they want is your money. They don't care about you. I've had elderly grandparents with family close by where we would go check on them daily. We would all take turns. We had nurses that would come in and we paid for. And it was far, far better because the grandparents could stay in their home. Their family would come visit. They had a nurse to come by and check on them. But they didn't need to have their whole life being taken over by a guardian. These guardians are capable of getting you basically acquitted as incompetent, and a judge will rule in their favor. And the next thing you know, you can't even tell them what you want for breakfast. So be cautious. Use your head. Talk to your family. You have to understand something. Your family is your family, and your family will look out for you. If they're far away, make arrangements with your family to have something done that excludes these guardianships. It's a little bit extra work to hire a home visiting nurse to come in and check on you, but that is something you can control, and they have no control over your bank account. They have no control over your estate. But once you fall prey to a guardian, you will lose everything you own, and so will your family. If you had any dreams of leaving your family something, there'll be nothing left.
Thank you, Sal. That was a very sobering statement. And understand that guardianship abuse happens in every state in this country, and we need to make it stop. This is a serious problem, and if you are affected by it, it's usually too late to do anything. I want to thank Becky for joining us and telling us her story, and to our partner Total Front Page. Remember, if you own a business or are looking to expand your digital marketing presence, check out totalfrontpage.com and mention AOJ Podcast to get a free consultation. It is a great service that will give every business an edge over their competitors. Also, remember to get your two free downloads from Audible by clicking the link on the top of archangelsofjustice.org's homepage. We always appreciate it if you leave comments or ratings on iTunes, as it helps other people find this podcast. Please follow us on Twitter or Facebook and subscribe to us on YouTube so you don't miss anything from our upcoming case file season on the Leonard Peltier case. If you enjoyed this podcast, then please support us on Patreon so we can continue bringing you great content. Lastly, if you use Amazon, make sure to click that link on archangelsofjustice.org when you make your next purchase. From Sal, Ira, and I, thank you again for listening, and we look forward to having you here for our next episode of Archangels of Justice Weekly.